Herzlich willkommen zu deinem Podcast Unlimited Greatness. Hier geht es um das Thema Manifestation, Gesetz der Anziehung, Money Mindset und alles rund um ein erfolgreiches Leben und Business. Mein Name ist Beate Glöser, Mutter von zwei erwachsenen Kindern, seit über 20 Jahren glücklich verheiratet, Buchautorin, Keynote-Speakerin, Mindset- und Business-Coach, Unternehmerin und Gründerin der Greatness Academy. Ich liebe es, Menschen dabei zu helfen, ihre größten Träume zu verwirklichen, ein erfolgreiches Business aufzubauen, viel Geld zu verdienen und dabei auch noch eine Menge Spaß zu haben. Schön, dass du da bist und jetzt wünsche ich dir viel Spaß mit einer neuen Folge Unlimited Greatness.
So, welcome to the podcast Unlimited Greatness. Today it's gonna be in English because I have a very interesting man here in the podcast. And he's talking English. And I thought it's a great idea to introduce this man to you and to learn from his wisdom. Because I met him like 3 weeks ago on a cruise. And we had a wonderful dinner. We sat next to each other. And we had a conversation. It touched me so much. I thought he's so interesting. Human being, and I thought, oh my god, the world in Germany has to know this man, because he said some things, it touched me so much. And I thought, oh my god, it's what I'm teaching, and he's leaving it from his own, and I loved it. So here is Patrick Ortmann. Patrick, welcome to this podcast. I thank you so much that you are here.
Oh, it's great to be here. And there's no way that I can possibly live up to that introduction. So everything is downhill from this point forward. And to our German listeners, I apologize. My German is much worse than my English. So we're going to do it in English.
Yes, we do it. And I would still say some words about you, because I also didn't know it until like 2 days ago. You are a great salesperson. So you did a lot of sales in your life. You even founded a recruiting agency that was focusing on placing salespeople. So it's very interesting because I love selling. So I was like, oh, okay, maybe we can talk today also about this, marketing and sales. It's like a very important thing. And but what was the thing? What I was very like, oh my goodness, you are the world champion. Let's say this right. Jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
Difficult for me. Jiu-jitsu.
Very good.
And I would like to start, like, how did you come from as a salesperson? You grounded a company and now you make something completely different. Maybe just take us to your story. Where you want to start, because I think whatever we start at, we will find a beautiful conversation.
Well, it's a tricky question because there's a lot of entry points to this story. But I think that when I look at the things that I've done most recently that I'm very proud of, and I think that are notable for this podcast, they really have their roots in the very beginning, which is I was born to a very young mother, single mother in the middle of South Dakota, which anybody who's ever been to the United States knows that it's the last state that anybody would ever want to visit. It's very cold, very unpopulated. And I was born in a little town called, get this, Freeman, South Dakota. And I think that my entire life has been living the life of a free man. And when you grow up in a place like that on a farm where there's chores to be done and work that can't be avoided, you learn a work ethic, right? And I think that work ethic is sort of the cornerstone of everything. And through a solid work ethic, I've been able to stitch, I think, a life of meaning together. So that's kind of where it starts. But let me jump forward because nobody wants to hear about my time in kindergarten or anything like that.
But right? You know, this also already so interesting because I know your story now also with your world championship. And it explains a lot of your how you work, why you are so you are like, oh, so motivated, and you do your work. So wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that when I look at what whatever our definition of greatness is, people who have accomplished big things in their life, who have gone forward boldly, those people have something. It's a North Star in their life that's pulling them forward, and they can't look away from it, right? And I think that if we're seeking success, we need to find what that North Star is. And for me, I think that I was just sort of born with it in a life where there was no other choice but to look forward, right? Mm-hmm. If it's cold outside and the animals need to be fed, even though you're cold and would love nothing more than to be inside, you can't, because the animals need to eat that evening. It's going to be a harsh evening. And so there was no other way but forward. And I've run into this idea many times in my life. I think that when you and I first met on the cruise ship, one of the things that I brought up to you was the concept of the Winter War, which was Russia versus Finland. And during the 40s, Russia decided to invade Finland. And the Finns were way under-equipped and undermanned. They did not have the number of airplanes or tanks to be able to head off the invasion that was coming their way. And by any account, it should have been an absolute landslide for the Russians, right? Well, it wasn't. The Finns absolutely throttled them and drove them back across their border. And the mindset that they went into it with was sisu. And it's a Finnish term, and I don't claim to be a Finn or anything like that, but as I understand it, the term is without a counterpoint. It means it is going to happen because it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's a really interesting idea, right? There's no but that comes after that statement. Sisu, but if that doesn't happen, then we'll learn to speak Russian. There is no but. And so the people picked up their pitchforks, their torches, their rocks, and they started hurling them at the Russian forces and drove them back across the line. And I think that when I look at some of the things that I've accomplished, whether I knew the term or not, I was practicing sisu. There just wasn't another option. The animals had to be fed. Mm. So with that being said, my life has been wandering. I think that a lot of people measure success by the size of their treasure chest at the end of the day. And I don't know that it's necessarily that for me. I think that you can accomplish very big things, still make money. I would never turn down money, which is probably why I'm in sales, but I don't think that it's the only thing. Yes. And I had a business mentor that came to me once upon a time and said, Patrick, if I gave you $1 million, actually, let me play this with you, Beata. If I gave you $1 million today, no strings attached, would you accept $1 million?
If you would give me just $1 million.
Yeah, no strings attached.
Yes.
Yes, everybody says yes, right? Nobody turns it down. What if I attached a string to it and I said, in exchange for $1 million, you would have 24 hours remaining in your life, and that would be the time window that you could spend your $1 million. Would you accept $1 million on those terms?
Yes.
You would take it if it meant that your life ended in 24 hours?
Ah, okay. I thought I have just 24 hours to live. Okay, oh. I didn't understand. Ah, no, yes. I would not. So it would mean that I take this, but I have just 24 yes. hours to live. No, of course not.
Of course not. No. And well, let me push the issue with you even further. What if I gave you $100 billion, but you only had 24 hours remaining to live? It's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking like, how could I change the situation that I have 24 hours with the billions of dollars?
Nope. The deadline is the deadline. There's no getting out of that.
Deadline. No, I would not take it.
Of course you wouldn't. And nobody would. So I think that what we've proven is a day in your life is worth more than $100 billion.
Yeah. Oh, right. That's very good.
It's kind of a deep concept, right? And so every single day we need to get after it, right?
Hmm.
And we can't let the sun set on $100 billion day without getting $100 billion out of our day.
Yeah.
It's an interesting idea, right?
Oh, it's very deep.
And so if all that you're doing is chasing money and you say to yourself, I made $10,000 today, I made $100,000 today, is that where you wanted to spend your 24 hours? Because that day is gone.
No, but I don't think in this concept either or, you know. I think I take the money and I have a beautiful life and I have an impact on the world. So lot of people think like money or, but I don't think this. I was used to think like this because it's like, money doesn't make you happy and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. I think that the concept, what a lot of people are separating from the money and they don't get money.
Mm-hmm. Well, trust me, I'm somebody who loves money as much as the next person, maybe even more. But I think that what the thought exercise really demonstrates is how important each day is and to maximize our days, right? If you can go to bed at the end of the day and say, I made the most of my time today, whether it was enriching people, whether it was growing my wealth so that I can do great things, be independent, live the type of life that I was destined to live, whether it's building my body for health and longevity, whatever it is, when I look back at that and I take account of it, can I say that I did everything that I could possibly do? And if I can say yes, then I count that day as a success, right? And so when you start to put together some of these concepts that I've cobbled together throughout my life, we get this Sisu idea where it's just going to happen and every single day is very important. And so my days just work because they're important and they're just going to work because Sisu, right? So with that being said, I've wandered in life in many respects. I'm attracted by shiny objects and I go 100% for them. Whether it's, I was always a student. Actually, let me take a quick aside here. I said that I could say a lot of words and I'm gonna say a lot of words.
Keep going.
One of the things that I believe is that our body is sort of two separate components. We have the mind, which creates action, emotion, and all of these sorts of things. And then we have the actual meat vehicle itself that carries our brain around. And when we do good things for our body, our mind benefits. When we do good things for our mind, our body benefits, right? And so it's a symbiotic relationship. And both need to be in harmony. If you feed your body garbage, your mind won't work very well. If you feed your mind garbage, your body won't work very well. You get stressed out when all you do is consume garbage materials that are force-fed to you from a number of different places, right? So having balance between those two is very important. And one of the things that I've always tried to be is a bit of a Renaissance man. And I came across that concept at a very, very young age when I got into some of the artists who also dabbled in science. And I thought it was very interesting that you could be a Da Vinci, for example, and build flying machines, theoretically, as well as paintings like the Mona Lisa. What a broad perspective and mind. And I always wanted to be a bit of a Renaissance man. Additionally, I, having done some reading and things of that nature, found out that they were also very much into physical fitness. And one of the things that they were into was like grappling, Greco-Roman type wrestling. And I thought that was interesting that the physicality was also part of their world. And so I think that my entire life has also been about education and physical fitness. So throughout high school and my early years, as well as college and stuff like that, I played sports. Every single season I played a sport, whether it was soccer, which is football where you are, basketball, baseball, track, cross country, et cetera. I was always doing something. And for whatever reason, during those seasons, I just focused intently on being the best that I could be at that thing. And for whatever reason, I always got invited to traveling teams and various elite offshoots of teams and voted team captain and things of that nature. And it wasn't something that I was necessarily striving to get those achievements, but I just wanted to be very good at those things. And so I would apply my body and my mind to those endeavors. So when I got done with college, I don't think that I was done learning. I felt like a voracious appetite to keep going. So I wound up going to law school. And I've always been a big fan of how we organize societies, how we create justice and equity and things like that. And the law is one avenue to get that done. So in going through law school, I really enjoyed myself, especially the academic side of law. Got done. I actually didn't really enjoy the practice of law. Isn't that kind of funny? Like the actual doing of law was not nearly as fun as the learning and the theory of law, which takes me into sales. I moved away from my practice in Michigan to get a postdoctorate degree in tax law at the University of Washington. And I wound up meeting my wife, who you know, Vicky.
Yes.
Wonderful
woman. Wonderful lady.
Yes. She actually is the accountant for Proctor Gallagher. And that's how we all actually met. Vicky was one of the employees on the cruise, and that gave me the introduction to you. And I wasn't looking for a relationship, but sometimes the universe kind of conspires and knows what's right for you. And while I was very happy being my Renaissance man, kind of a monk, the universe interjected just an amazing person into my life, Vicky. And I'm still with her to this day, almost 25 years later, couldn't be happier. Mm-hmm. And I knew that this is something that was going to be important. You just, when the right person comes to you, you feel it, right? And from day one, I felt drawn to her. Like I've never been drawn to anybody else. And I think the same way I focused on other pursuits in my life, I gave it the same sort of initiative. And I tried to understand, being the dumb, stumbling romantic that I was, not very capable, I needed to figure that out. And so I fumbled my way to a degree of success, and ultimately she wound up saying yes, but she wasn't interested in moving back to where I was practicing. So I needed to figure out a job. So you know what I did? I went into sales.
Okay. That's the story about, oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, what do you do if you're an attorney, but you can't be an attorney in a state that you're not licensed to practice in?
Well, you do what you
do. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, I enjoy talking to people, as everybody a half hour into this podcast is already realizing.
Yeah. I was thinking when you were talking now, because you are saying about the mind and the body, and I really think so, it's so important. And I am telling very often about intuition, and intuition is something, it's coming from our body. It's coming from our heart. It's coming from the head. It's really, you feel it. And I'm thinking now, I am interested what you're saying about this. Is it maybe like there is, how to say, there is like, it's depending, or it's stronger, the intuition, when you are so good to your body, when you are so much in your body, because you are always in sports and it was always very important to you. And you said you have something for your body and for the mind. So do you think that you feel it stronger when you feel the intuition, when you know it's right? Because I know also the feeling, so it's right. There is no doubt. It's gonna happen. It will happen. I know it in some things, and some things it's like, it would be nice, you know. It's something different. It's not the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're onto something. And let me ask you a question. Do you feel better or worse mentally after a workout? Do you feel better or worse after eating a healthy meal than an unhealthy meal?
Better, of course.
Yes, for sure.
Yes.
Think back to a time where you ate something that was fatty, fried, full of sugar, things like that. And it might actually look great on, you know, initially, like, ooh, fried chicken with, you know, cake and ice cream afterwards or something like that. And it looks tremendous. It smells good, right? But usually right afterwards, within an hour or so, the last thing you want to do is even stand up, right?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
You usually get a little bit of a haze. You feel lethargic. And when you feed your body garbage, your brain works poorly, right? And so I think that we open ourselves up to external stimuluses, call it messages from the universe, the vibrations that other people are putting off when we don't have a fog over our mind. And that can be a fog due to, think about the stress that boils away when you go hit a punching bag or run on a treadmill. All of a sudden, the person that you're mad at, you're not quite as mad anymore. You're willing to come back to the table of negotiation and hear their side of the story, where initially when the confrontation started, you weren't having any of it. We've all felt that way, right? And so I do think that in tune body, in tune mind opens us up to messages that we would otherwise miss. And I wonder how many people listening to this podcast today have missed opportunities in their life because they were operating under some sort of a haze. I don't know. I'm guessing quite a few. I know I have at points in my life.
Yeah, I guess too.
Yeah. And that's okay to be human, right? We all do things. It's not, you know, I had a sales manager, her name was Shelley Davis, and she would kick me out the door and tell me, go sell something. And I would go door to door selling stuff. And one of the things that she would say when I came back and said, oh, I was so close to closing this deal, Shelley, I was this close. And she said, well, where did it go wrong? And I said, well, I positioned this certain thing in a certain way, and that person didn't really resonate with it. They weren't picking up what I was putting down, you know? And she goes, well, everybody's going to fall down. The question is, are you going to pick something up while you're down? And I like that, you know, while you're down there, go ahead and pick something up. And so if you're listening to the podcast and you say to yourself, maybe my diet isn't where it needs to be. Maybe I have walked around in a fog before. Maybe there's outlets that I could release stress that's fogging my mind. That's okay. The first step is just identifying the fact that maybe you have an area of opportunity. And while you're down there, pick something up. Let's improve.
Yeah. It's the first step to accept this and then to change it if you don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the first foundation of most 12-step programs, right?
Yes.
Knowing you've got a problem. Usually the problem is us too, right? It's a lot easier to point fingers someplace else, but I think that we're masters of our own destiny. And I think that to push it off on something else or somebody else is a huge mistake, because no improvement takes place when we blame an external force or external factor. Mm-hmm. We need to control what we can control. If you say, this group over here is causing me a lack of success, well, then I have to change an entire group before I can become successful. That's even harder than changing myself. That's just an excuse not to be excellent. That's all that that is. Right.
Yeah. You are the problem, so, you are the solution.
Yes. Yes. I think there's a lot of people who preach that for sure. And I'm a believer in it. So going back to my loving wife, I started in sales because I needed a job. And oddly, you might find this surprising, I dove in full force and read all of the books, listened to all the audio tapes on how to sell. And I've read literally, I don't even want to try to put a number to it, easily 100 different sales manuals, and taken a number of different sales trainings and courses, and you name it, I've done it. And I just love sales. It's the best thing in the entire world. But
did you love it from the beginning?
Yes, from minute number one.
Ah, okay.
And you know what's interesting? A lot of people could get excited about selling really sexy items, high-end merchandise, very sophisticated service or solutions. Very few people get excited about selling like air conditioners for homes. It's not very sexy. Well, that's where I started. And I loved it. And I was filling a need. And I figured out ways to make it more than just a box that heats or cools your house, right? And through probing questions, I would figure out what's important to this house. And sometimes you'd come across some really amazing stories. I remember one time I was in a home that was very modest. And if I was making a purchase on their behalf, I might have purchased the most inefficient system because it's an entry level and very cheap. But in doing some questioning, I found out that one of their children had very, very bad respiratory issues. And this child, especially during certain times of the year, wasn't able to go outside. And because of that, they were living a different quality of life than some of their friends. And that's kind of a shame. And I said, you know what? I have a solution for you. It's not cheap, but it will constantly circulate the air in your house and draw it through a hospital grade filtration system backed up by a UV light that will kill 99% of all viruses in the air. And I can't change the world outside of the house, but I can change the world inside of your house.
Wow.
And, you know, all of a sudden we went from a $700 very basic system to a $14,000 system that probably really stretched this family's budget. But who am I to gauge what's important to them in their life? For them, they probably would have spent many times that to make sure that their child doesn't suffer and is plugged into a machine all day long. So I loved sales because I can change people's lives with pretty much anything that I'm selling. I just need to know what's important to you.
So, but
have you ever had experiences like that?
Not this
in sales.
Well, I have a lot of experiences when I sell my programs and the people change their life. So this is like,
yes,
it's like, oh my goodness, when they tell me how they are happy, how they are fulfilled, and then they make money and everything, and their relationships changing. So it's like everything is together. It's not like one. It's like everything is together. So these are my experience. That's why I'm doing this, what I'm doing. That's why I love to set my programs. But it's also very interesting when you're saying, so what I heard now, and it's so good for, I think, everybody who is listening here also, is to find what is really the benefit for the person. It's like you found something what is really, it's not because just I want to sell, it's really beneficial for the people why you're selling. So that's why it's selling so important and so great. Because when you have just, you have to sell to make money. It's not the energy.
Or yes,
you have to sell because my chef is saying I have to sell 10 a day or something. So it's not the thing, you know, because I think a lot of things is the connection, the really deep connection between people, and really helping really to make the difference in their life. And that's what you are experienced very on the beginning when I'm listening to you.
You know, the reason I'm on your podcast today, when we first sat down and talked at that dinner, I was so taken aback by how passionate you are for what you do. And I think that of all the products that can be sold, there's very few that reach the point that you're at right now, because it's truly the master key for life.
Yeah.
And it's almost like there's not a price high enough for what it is that you're selling. It's such an unobtainium type of an object to have real fulfillment and focus and satisfaction and all those things in life. It far outweighs the fun that you get when you get a new car or a diamond ring. Those are fading. The car will get crashed, the ring will get lost, those sorts of things, right? But when you have like a life focus, a destination you're vigorously moving toward, that compelling force, that North Star that we started the conversation with, there's really not a price tag you can put on it. It's awesome. And very few people have it. Very few people.
Yeah.
That's why, but it's achievable. That's the crazy thing. Yeah, everybody can have it.
Yes. Yes. But this is something also you have to be passionate for this. It's like, because you know what, for me, it changed my life. And I know where I am coming from. I am coming from, I was not happy. It's not really true, because I had also the part in me what I found always something good in the life. But there was also like, I'm not good enough. I am this not. I am not, I have to do this to prove myself and stuff like this. And it made my life kind of hard, because I always comparing to better people in my opinion, better people. And I thought, okay, I am the small, the other, you know, I'm not small, but I was always thinking I'm so small and so not good enough. And when it when I changed the perspective for me, as on me, to seeing myself differently, I found out that I can help people more. It's like mm-hmm. the beginning, I thought, okay, I have to make myself small so that the people can feel good. You mm-hmm. know, but I make myself small so the people can make themselves bigger. But it's bullshit. It doesn't work. The people think about themselves, about the growth, when you are like this, okay, I am here and I know you can do it because I did it. Mm-hmm. You are the proof.
Yes.
That's why I'm so passionate about this, because my life is the beauty. I didn't even imagine that my life would be so nice how it's now. It's so good.
I love that. I love that. Like, overcoming your own negative self-talk is huge, right? And it sounds like you were able to do that. It's very easy to compare ourselves to other people or to diminish who we are as a person or the things that we've done. I think that we need to be our own biggest fans. Yes. And that's not, it's not an egotistical thing.
No.
But I do think that, you know, we spent a little bit of time chatting about the idea of, you know, walking around in a fog and our mind not being in the right place and getting rid of negative thoughts through things like physical movement. One of the things that I'm a big believer in is talking to myself positively. And every single day, I start my day with a mantra. And every single day, I end my day with a mantra. And before I go into competition, before I wind up body slamming somebody to the ground and trying to break a leg or an arm or something like that, or choke them unconscious, I say a mantra every single time. And the mantra I built and I believe in, and it is something that reinforces my mindset, because there's a lot of times that I'll look at the record of the person that I'm going to go up against and I say, wow, they're very accomplished. This is the Pan American champion, or this person won the Asian nationals, or you know, the United States champion or South American champion, because I compete against some very high level people. This is what I say every single day. I am the God of war, the breaker of wills, the chooser of fates, the one who wins with unmatchable speed, volcanic force, and unrelenting pressure. In me, there are no excuses, only unwavering focus. This is my destiny, which cannot be denied. There is no mercy in me. I suffer all things, and I grow daily. All flee in the face of my fury, and I stand alone atop the tallest peak with the world championship crown in my hand. And I say that every single day. And oh, it's...
goodness. That's so, whoa.
It's pretty heady.
It is so deep. And, you know, when you are talking now, I feel the energy.
Mm.
It's not, these are not just the words. The energy you mm-hmm. put in the words, you believe it. And you believe it every day more and more because you are telling yourself this. And that's what the, mm-hmm. a lot of people are not, they don't do it. They could do it, and they even know mm-hmm. that it's good to do it, but they are not so motivated to do it every day. I do it too.
Mm-hmm. It's, I, if there's one thing that I can leave people with, it is be good to yourself. Say nice things to yourself. You deserve it.
Yeah.
So sales led me a lot of places, and through a number of consistently being the number one performer on the team and outselling everybody by orders of magnitude, I would get promoted and go on fabulous trips, and they saw fit to move me around the country. And I wound up going into telecom when telecom was a little bit of a newer thing and nobody had smartphones. And then we moved into the era of smartphones and mobile data and redundancy and failover solutions and these sorts of things. And through a series of promotions, wound up selling to a lot of very large Fortune level companies like Microsoft, for example, and oh. sold them tens upon tens of millions of dollars of equipment and services. And those were great. I loved those big wins and made a lot of money doing it. And then as they do with most salespeople who are doing a good job, they promote you into management. And then I was a manager, and then a senior manager, and then director, and then senior director. And then I'm managing the western half of the United States, and I've got hundreds of sales reps reporting into me and things like that. And that was awesome. The achievement was great. And each step in the process, I took time to try to be a student of what it means to be a leader, what it means to develop people underneath you, and to multiply the things that you knew how to do across the broader footprint. And I loved every bit of it. But can I tell you that I never appreciated it as much as I did sitting across the table from people like the family buying the furnace for their son. Microsoft Corporation has probably pulled out all the equipment that I ever sold them and changed it out for something new. And I'm not offended by that, but the impression that I'm going to be left with on my last day as I'm staring at the ceiling, I won't be thinking about the sale to Microsoft. I'm going to be thinking about the sale to that family, right?
Oh,
So it's interesting where I derive satisfaction from. I love sales and I love making money, and I continue to do that today. But it's through my art of sales, trying to influence and change people for the better. And I know that it sounds very, I don't know.
It sounds great.
Easy to say and hard to do maybe. But it's really where my head is at. At some point in time with all large corporations, there's restructuring. And I knew that it was coming for me when they laid off the chief officers and then senior vice president. And then I knew I was next. Mm-hmm. So along with about 3,000 other people, they laid me off. And I have no hard feelings. They took care of me very, very well. And so with my newfound time and money, I opened a business called Sales First Recruiting. And it brought together a lot of my love, which is hunting for new clients. So I'm still selling. It is working exclusively with salespeople. And it gives me the opportunity to do more career pathing, which is something that I really enjoyed as a senior leader for a company. And giving people career advice was very important to me. And especially during the pandemic years, when a lot of people were very uncertain about what was next for them. They'd just been laid off. Times are tough. They see the headlines. Uncertainty was abundant, both from a health perspective, economic perspective, world instability perspective, et cetera. And it was really great to personally be solid. And so mentally, I was still on an even ground where I could give good advice to people. And I shared with them my thoughts on how to be a winning job candidate in a tough market. And I'll tell you what, I love that so much. And making placements during that period of time was very satisfying. The money was great. And I think that the money flowed because I was doing something that the universe kind of wanted me to be doing. And it said, if you do this, I'll give you this. Yeah. And just the reward is next level. So if you can marry this idea of chasing your ambitions and the things that give you satisfaction, I think the money will flow too. The money will flow like crazy. Yeah. So I think there's a way to marry those together. Here's where my life gets really kind of weird though. I was doing jujitsu and one of my coaches came to me and said, Patrick, I think that you owe it to yourself to try to qualify for the world championships, which are held once a year in Las Vegas. About 10,000 competitors will descend on the convention center in Las Vegas, and it's huge. There are 46 mats that are running all day long for 3 days in one giant bracket where people are single eliminated, winnowing down until there's one person in each weight division and class. And it's such a daunting idea because the numbers of people are boggling. I have to go through a lot of people in order to get to the end. And each match is only 5 minutes long, but it's 5 minutes of all of the energy that you have because that person's giving you all the energy that they have. And there's no niceties. It's not a training session anymore. Well, they will, where your partner would normally pull up short of damaging your body, these people have no issue with this. In a submission tournament, they will submit you because you will tap out and say, I can no longer move forward, or they will impair your body to the point where you just physically can't go forward. And neither one is particularly great, but one is definitely worse than the other.
Yes.
So with that being said, I've been doing a lot of national competitions, especially in the state of Arizona and surrounding areas. And I was doing very, very well. And
how long
he said, if you really...
How long you are doing this?
5-ish years. So not very long. It's actually funny thing. Can I tell you the influence of a podcaster like yourself?
Yeah, of course.
So I'm a big fan of podcasts. And I actually enjoyed listening to the podcasts that you sent me over, the few that are in English. I hope you have more. Because I think there's a market and an appetite over here for your content. One of the podcasts that is very popular and you may have heard of is the Joe Rogan Experience. And so Joe is a practitioner of jiu-jitsu of many, many years. And in listening to his podcasts, I said, you know what? He really feels very passionate about this. And I'm feeling what he's saying. I'm going to go do it. And so on a whim, I just drove past the jiu-jitsu gym one day. I walked in and I said, I'm signing up. And they go, well, you get a free week. And I go, I don't need the free week. I'm here. I'm doing this.
Oh, I love it. Look, this is like, I have the decision. I do it. It's not like I'm trying.
Yes.
This is what I'm telling the people. You are not tried to do something. You do it. And you are like the living example for this. I really love it. I don't need free week. I am here. Oh,
yes. I'm all in before I've even ever tried it. Wow. And so again, it's like this repeating record. I did well. I elevated myself amongst my peers. I needed more competition, decided to start competing locally and then nationally. And then my coach said, you could be a world champion. And there was that little tickle in my ear that said, no, you can't. No, you can't be a world champion. It's that self-talk, right? And so, you know, the idea of those people are much better. They've been doing it longer, et cetera, et cetera, started to creep into my head. And I immediately put a foot down on that crap. That's not happening. That's not how I operate. And so as soon as I heard that voice, it was almost like a challenge that required me to do it. And it was weird. It actually wasn't my coach saying I should do it. It was the voice in my head saying you can't do it that caused me to actually do it. And so during the Gulf War, there was a guy named General Norman Schwarzkopf. Do you remember him at all? He was the leader of the Allied, or the, I don't know, the forces that were invading Iraq. Norman Schwarzkopf held a press conference. And during that press conference, he said, we always know the right thing to do. The hard part is doing it. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen that in print. I've never heard it again. I was listening and I was probably, God, I don't know, Gulf War, late college, whatever it was, right? No, would have been high school. Yeah. I remember it to this day because I just thought it was the coolest quote. And you know that feeling in the pit of your stomach? Maybe you were a kid and you found a wallet and there was a whole bunch of money in it. You're like, you look over your shoulder and that's the feeling of, I should take this money. And inside that nervousness that you're feeling is, that's the hard force to act against, but it's the right force. Usually the hard decision is the right decision. For me not to eat that fried chicken and cake, that's harder than eating the fried chicken and cake. It's harder to wake up in the morning and go fight your friends at the gym than it is to stay in bed. It's harder to be honest with your spouse when you're hiding a secret than it is to tell the secret. It's harder for us to admit that we're screwing up and blame somebody else right? So we always know the right thing to do. The hard part is doing it. And so maybe it's doing a program like you sell, right? I don't know. Maybe I should. Could I really start my own business? Could I create multiple streams of income? That seems like it's for other people who are more entrepreneurial than me. Well, it'd be a whole lot easier to say no because you don't have to change anything. Nothing needs to change to say no. That's easy. You know, it's hard saying yes and going and signing up and saying, I'm all in.
Yes.
Are you sure there's a week free? Nope, I'm all in 100%. So with that being said, that voice in my head that Norman Schwarzkopf talked about convinced me that I know the right thing to do. That voice is telling me, and the feeling that I get of hating that voice compelled me to do it. So I said, all right, what do we need to do? And from that point forward, I trained in a way that I've never trained for anything in my entire life. All the hours that I studied trying to pass the bar exam were grueling. And it was hours every day studying Latin phrases. And you'd have the literature was so dense that you actually had to have a dictionary next to you to understand the paragraph that you were reading. Then you'd have to reread it again. That was not as hard as training for Worlds. And I spent all day in the gym training. And then I would also go to my fitness gym where I'd do calisthenics, weights, all of that sort of stuff, treadmill. I would do wrestling practices, judo practices, complementary arts to jiu-jitsu. And then make sure that my diet was on point. And it was every single day, no days off was my motto. No days off. Wow. There's never a day off. The body is always moving. This is just going to happen. Sisu. And even on the days where I'm injured or hurt, the body is still moving. I'll find something to do. I'm getting out of bed and I'm going to the gym. We're going to find something that I can do even with a bad knee or a bad wrist or whatever the problem was. There was a point, Beata, where the bottoms of my feet were completely raw and bleeding, and I had bandaged them because I was spending so much time driving and into double leg takedowns and pushing my partner with my feet and trying to grip the mat. And I had lost all of my calluses and my feet hurt. And it would be way easier to just stay at home and let those heal for a week or two and not go back. It'd be way easier. But Sisu, it's not an option. Because we're going to win worlds. We're going to be a world champion someday. And this is what it feels like to be a world champion. And it's a very lonely experience too. Your teammates are there, but they're not doing what you're doing. They're intersecting with your day-long training. They're there for an hour, and then another one shows up, and then another one shows up. And so they're seeing you an hour at a time. So their window of you is just 1 hour increments. And you feel like they do. I was there for an hour. Patrick was there for an hour. No, Patrick was really there all day long. And so it's kind of a lonely feeling. My wife, again, I feel like the universe put the right woman in front of me. She's my biggest supporter. And most women go crazy if you're like packing up the duffel bag for the third time that day to go to another gym. And she supported me the whole way through that process. And like every good Hollywood story, right? The hero goes through adversity, gets to the final moment, the final match, and they win, right? Wrong, Beata, wrong. I lost. My first year at Worlds, I got out on the mat and I was going against a guy who was actually pretty mediocre. Mm-hmm. He did not have a tremendous track record. He was successful, don't get me wrong. I mean, everybody at this level is good. Definitely an outlier in that top 10% of, you know, jiu-jitsu players. But in that group, he was just okay. And we battled, and it was a battle back and forth. Neither of us scored any points. Neither of us got any submissions. And at the end of the day, the ref just had to make a decision. And they raised the other person's hand. And I lost by a referee decision. And it was so defeating. I thought about over a year of just training for this one match and the hundreds and hundreds of hours. and all of the massages to get rid of the aching muscles, and all of the mantras, and all of the people that wished you well and come back with a medal, that you were going to have to go home and say, I lost. And it's on television and stuff like that. So everybody who was watching, I had a big group of people there in person watching me. And it was, don't worry, sport, we'll get them next time. Very hard. It's hard to fall. Yes. Have you ever had an experience where you like had a major crushing defeat where you felt like you gave it your all and you came up wildly short?
I think they're not in this so big like world championship, but I know it, of course. I know it, of course, that I had a goal and I didn't achieve it, and then I have to go further, just not stopping. So I think that's the most important thing in this, in the life. You just lose if you don't get up. And
you
get further.
Do you know the Dylan Thomas poem where he says, do not go gentle into that good night?
No.
You ever heard that poem? It's where he talks about raging at the dying of the light. It's a great poem. Needless to say, the idea behind do not go gentle into that good night, I'm not resigned to my fate. I'm not resigned to this outcome. There's going to be fight still left in me. And as long as there's still fight in me, I can reload and I can re-engage, right? And so that's what I did. I came back from Worlds, and literally on the plane ride back from Worlds, I started thinking about what am I going to do better this year? Because I have 365 days to win Worlds, and we're going to improve. And so that was my mindset. I'm going to win. And through a weird serendipity, again, the universe conspiring, things happened. I decided that this was going to be the thing that was going to be most important in my life. And I was going to put everything other than the love of my wife into the back seat. Mm-hmm. And I was going to drive this forward. And so I sold Sales First Recruiting. It's crazy. But for me, I had given it almost a decade of everything that I've had. And I could keep going for sure. And I loved what I did. But as easy as I built it, I can build something else again. But this thing will expire. This physicality will expire. There will be a day when I'm 85 years old and I'm no longer able to compete at a level. The people that I compete against typically are in their late 20s to 30s at the peak. And not to disclose too much, but I'm going to be 50 this year. And so to excel at any level of physicality at almost 50 is just crazy talk. Mm-hmm. Everything hurts more at the end of the day than it does when I was 20, for sure. But that doesn't stop us, right? So the universe conspired once again, and I met a man who was out hunting. I was on my property. I have a big property outside of Scottsdale, Arizona that we're developing. And on my property, I was cleaning up some old barbed wire fence and stuff like that that had been left out there. And I saw a man walking across the corner of my property. I went up and talked to him. And it turns out he was out there hunting. And he's also a renowned sports physiologist and cardiovascular surgeon. And so is his wife. And all that they do now is they have a private practice in Scottsdale. It's about $15,000 a year. And they see 100 patients. And their promise to each of those patients is that they will optimize your heart. And you will never die of a heart attack. You will never die of a stroke. You'll die for sure, but it won't be because of those things. And so I enrolled in their program, and they saw what I was trying to accomplish. And they improved me in a number of ways. Their center is very robust and very equipped for people like myself. And they plugged me into every machine possible, put me on the treadmills and exercise bikes. And they took vials and vials of blood. Every single quarter, I was going in for regular checkups, and they would see me for hours and hours at a time. And we optimized the body, we optimized the diet, we optimized the exercise. And oh my gosh, I was.
Yeah, I am like, you are so, oh my God, you are crazy.
So I know, trust me, I know. And this is on top of all my normal training. This is the file of paper that we developed from just 1 year of testing and all of the different testing that we did to optimize my body. And 365 days and many local and national tournaments later, and I'm winning all of them. I'm at peak form and I'm wrecking people, just wrecking people in these tournaments. And when I say wrecking,
I saw the video, your fight. It's my God, it's like so quick.
So, yeah, I mean, you get to a point of disparity, especially with like local competitors that aren't as focused, where I'll walk out on the mat and 20 seconds later, they're raising my hand. It's just lightning bolt quick. They're just not operating at my level. And it's not that they can't. Again, they've made the decision, the easy decision. Oh, it's a lot easier to stay at home. I train 3 days a week. That's enough. No, it's not enough. Not if you want greatness, right? And so 365 days later, I'm back on the edge of the mat and I'm going through my mantra about ready for my first match. I am the God of War, the breaker of wills, the chooser of fates. And I think that the person standing next to me who's about to go out and watching me just with my eyes closed, rocking back and forth is probably like, this guy's a little crazy. And they might be right. They might be right. So during my bracket, I encountered a lot of good people and none of the matches was particularly quick. We're at a very elite level at this point, and you're going to go probably 5 minutes, and getting a submission on these people is very hard. Very few people get a submission at any point during Worlds because you're just very pure at that point. To get a submission is a real standout achievement. And if you get many submissions, that's a great day. Some of the people that I went against were two former world champions, the current world champion, the Pan-Asian champion, and European champions. So really, really, really good people. And without detailing all the matches, I win my first match by points, by a lot of points. Mm-hmm. I win my next match by a lot of points. As we go through the bracket, the competition is getting better and better because the better seeded people are rising to the top and I'm starting to encounter better people. My next match was very close. I won by 1 point. Mm-hmm. And the universe wanted me to keep going, apparently. Mm-hmm. The next match, I won by 2 points. Very, very close again. And as I'm continuing, the matches are very, very tight. I get to the last match, and this is where it gets kind of funny. And I'm going to stop before I talk about the match and just tell you about the lead up to the match. Go back to the year that I lost. As an attorney and a salesperson, I believe in asking a lot of questions and doing a lot of research before I ever propose anything to anybody. And I look at jiu-jitsu exactly the same way. I have spreadsheets on every single person that I've ever competed before I ever compete with them. I know everything about them. I know if they have a land dispute with their neighbor. I know if they've got a kid that went to jail for spray painting graffiti on the side of their school. I know how long they've been training for. I know everything about them. And I'll use it to my advantage. I was at one tournament here in Arizona, and I was rolling on the ground with this guy trying to choke him. And in his ear, I whispered, "Hey, Noah, how's your lawsuit with the city going?" And his body kind of froze for a second, like, "What? How does this?" And then I choked him.
So,
we don't know how information can be used to our advantage. Knowledge is power. And being a thinking game as well as a physical game is important to understand. And I think that life is too. So we need to engage our brain and we need to think through our problems. Every problem can be solved, but we need to think about it. And a lot of it is about doing our research and the hard, heavy lifting so that once we get to that moment where we need to perform, we're ready to perform. I think about some of the speeches that were given on that cruise ship. I don't think that people were winging it. I think that they spent time planning what they were going to say in advance, and that's why it came across professional. So I wasn't prepared to wing my world experience either. So in looking through the bracket the year that I lost, I identified the people that I thought were most likely to win. The person that I personally thought was going to be my biggest competition that year was a gentleman named Alan Bolin. And he wasn't world champion, but I saw what he was doing. He had won several big national tournaments. I saw what his background was and how he was winning. I looked at his videos because these are all televised, and I saw his style and I saw that he was very good and he was playing to win. Alan is somebody that I think would fit in really well in this podcast. He's an entrepreneur, started a large technology company. He's got about 200 employees. He's independently wealthy, owns a large ranch in Utah. And you know what he does with his spare time? He works out and does jujitsu. And I saw my reflection in Alan Bolin. And I wanted to fight him. If I won Worlds, I wanted it to be Alan Bolin because I thought he was the best person. I never got a chance to play against him because I got knocked out in that first round. Fast forward 1 year, the very, very, very last match for the world championship. Who's standing across from me?
Him.
Alan Bolin.
Yes.
Except now he's the world champion. He won it the year that I said that I thought he would be my number one competition. He won it all. So I predicted well. Wow. And when you grab somebody for the first time with real malice in your mind, and you want to throw them over your shoulder and land them right on their head, and you want to grab their neck and you want to choke it until they tap or go unconscious, they give you a feedback when you grab hold of them that is intense, and you can feel their training. You can feel their power and you can feel their technique, and instantly you can start to assess how hard is this match going to be. And I knew it was going to be probably the hardest match of my life. He gave me back what I feel like I've been giving people. And he was truly the yin for my yang. And we battled. And he shot in for a takedown. I stuffed it, grabbed the neck. We rolled, stood back up, re-engaged. And it was this true like clashing. I'm surprised there wasn't like sounds of thunder and lightning in the arena. Big crowd, everybody's cheering. Very hard to hear, by coaches yelling, and the intensity of the moment is really hard to describe because it's years of training and then several years of intense training and then this most focused year of my entire life all coming together. With 25 seconds left, I'm up by 2 points, but Alan has me on my back. And he's trying to get on top. And if he does that, he will score 3 points. Mm-hmm. And with the clock ticking down, I needed to do everything in my power to not let that happen. And I did a move called an inversion where I roll upside down. And in doing so, I grabbed his leg and pulled it into my chest. And I grabbed a hold of his ankle and I started to roll back on it, trying to detach his foot from his leg. And I looked up at my coach, who said, grab right here and pull on his ankle. And that little bit of coaching, along with the right move at the right time, put Alan Bolin on his belly as I was pulling on his foot. And you know what he did? He tapped out. I won with a submission, which is the most glorious way to win at Worlds. And I did it during the very final match, against the person that I most wanted to grapple with. And I was the god of war. And I feel like the universe had come together and rewarded the right activities done the right way. And so that's my journey to Worlds. And you know what I did after that? I said, I have 365 days until I have to defend it again against Alan Bolin. Let's go.
Oh, wow. So your goal is to do it again, right?
Gonna do it again.
This year?
This year, September.
Oh my God, I am celebrating with you.
Yes, we're gonna celebrate together. So.
Oh yes.
I don't know that this is what everybody was expecting from a podcast. We've gone a little bit past our ideal 45 minutes, even the hour. And I'll apologize for my lack of brevity.
Oh, it's so good. Patrick, I tell you, I learned so much now from our conversation that was so deep, in even in the stories you were telling and in the fights, there are so much wisdom. So I think the right people will take exactly what they have to take. And the people who don't understand, they don't understand. So it's the way how it works. But it was, for me, it was, wow, I'm really, I have even no words for this, because you know what I'm thinking? When I would know this story, when I would have this conversation with you, I would not ask you the question I asked you on the cruise, because I remember what I asked you. I asked you, what is if you don't want to go to the gym? And you said something like, oh, no, I ask you if you feel sometimes you don't want to. And you said, yeah, of course, but there is no option, no to go. And I was like, okay. That was something what was so deep in my, in what was like, I understood this with my whole body. It was not just words you said, it was like the energy was going through me. And now to listen to you now this hour, oh my goodness, thank you so much.
I'm so glad that you invited me on the podcast. And if you ever want, I would love to do more with you. I'm sure that we could probably continue to go down a lot more rabbit holes.
I would love to. And I was also, I would like to ask you, what can I do for you? Really? Normally on this point, I ask the people, okay, what can I do for you? It's like, do you have something? But you don't even have a social media.
It's like, yeah, I mean,
I cannot even tag you.
I'm a very weird person. I think that you've probably already learned that. It's interesting because a lot of people social sell, and as salespeople, social selling is a big part of it, and marketing yourself effectively. And I believe that, I really do. For me, though, clarity, bandwidth, extreme focus is more important to me than that branding piece. And there's never have it all. You usually have to give something to get something, right? And for me to have extreme focus, I give up on the things that can't add focus, because that's my priority. And I've seen just too many times where loving relationships will sit across each other at the dinner table, engrossed in a screen, filling their head with, you know, cats drumming and things like that. There's this beautiful person that sits across from you with vibrance and life story and desire and hopes and all these sorts of things that you could be exploring together. You could be building something that's rich. And here we are. And that can't be my life. It just can't be my life. And maybe I could be the bigger person and do it in bite-sized pieces. But for me, I'm a man of extremes, and I'm just going to go all in. And so for me, I just don't have any social media. So don't follow me. Don't subscribe. I'll show back up on this podcast at some point. I'll tell you how things have gone. There is nothing you can do for me. I live in a world of great abundance. I just hope that I gave something to you today.
Oh, yes. Oh, you did. And I know even you didn't have WhatsApp, and you did it for me, because it's so weak.
I did it just for you.
And it was so fun. I was so happy about this. Well,
don't be a stranger, my friend. And to everybody listening in, hope you enjoyed.
Thank you so much, Patrick. It was very beautiful. And I hope you guys, you did also enjoy the conversation. And if you did, so you cannot follow Patrick, but well, when the world championship is, maybe you can support him like that.
And it'll be the IBJJF World Championship in Las Vegas in September. It'll be televised.
Yes, it's going to happen. It will. It will. Yeah,
it will. Sisu. There's no other choice.
Yeah, I love it. Well, so thank you for listening. Thank you for being here, Patrick. And if you did like it, you can share the podcast. You can, when you know people who say, oh, they should listen to this man, so tell them to listen to this podcast because it's really incredible. There is so much wisdom. Thank you so much and bye-bye.
Danke für deine Zeit und dass du bis zum Schluss gehört hast. Wenn es dir gefallen hat und es dir geholfen hat, bitte teile den Podcast gerne auf Social Media und mit deinen Freunden. Du würdest uns auch helfen, wenn du dir ein paar Minuten Zeit nimmst und uns eine Bewertung schreibst. Mein größter Wunsch ist es, dieses Wissen an möglichst viele Menschen weiterzugeben, um so das Leben ein Stück zu einem besseren und liebevolleren Ort zu machen. Wenn du etwas mit uns teilen möchtest oder mehr von uns hören magst, findest du uns auf Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn oder auf unserer Webseite. Die entsprechenden Links findest du in den Shownotes. Danke, dass du da bist und ich freue mich auf dich bei der nächsten Folge. Deine Beate.